Good evening, Collins Port, Cemetery Lane, Schooner Bay, Mockingbird Heights, and our guests at Hill House. This is Daryl War, and I'm sure many recognize the lovely tune behind me. Well, I felt it was appropriate, both in how far we've come with all the nonsense and the fact that it's what Lurch might play for us at this moment in time. Not a whole lot I can do for all y'all, or much you can do for me if I am expected to be a complete psychic, or as I anticipated many out there to have QWERTY keyboards and a full range of focus and comprehension. Obviously, social networks and device tech destroyed a ton of that, as well as many relationships. Ah, well. So, for this podcast, it shall be long, but that means you can get out that mending, sewing, whatever, and listen a couple times, hopefully. And if nothing else, send me a photo of what you finished while listening, even if it's your dishes and you're showing me an empty sink. Make it a party. Tons of goodies, and first off, big congratulations to Helena Claire Boucher for getting ticked off at Night Court and going into a fandom beyond Dark Shadows. So let's hear a round of applause for Helena. Ooh. She's back at fanfiction.net and working on some happiness for our beloved Judge Harry Stone. It's M-rated, by the way. But still, I ain't going to go without celebrating that awesomeness. Plus, we have so little of Night Court online right now, you might as well go there to get a free slice. Whoever thought Night Court would be more difficult to find online than Dark Shadows. As the old saying goes, may you live in interesting times. By the way, if some of you are getting harassed for enjoying my work, or talking about it, or being my friend, or whatever the heck, well, stop talking to those people, or if they are harassing you, send them to talk to me. They very likely won't, but I'm not too happy that they're bothering you for enjoying some eclectic free entertainment. Or not understanding that neglect brings the same kind of temper from me that we've been seeing from our beloved witch Angelique for all these years. This is why I care about Angelique. She has valid concerns as opposed to the vile Jason McGuire. He can continue to rot for all I care. Now, more thank yous. Some glorious friends I've made online. Lisa. I made the effort to contact her in 2014, and as it so happens, she's been collecting everything, and I do mean everything. She's been a tough cookie through all of this stuff, and as giving as she's been, she rarely gets the credit she most richly deserves, which is why I'm saying it here. Now, I've posted a few things that are hers, but I just say, hey, you know, do you want me to post it, or do you want me to get it? I don't know. It just kind of comes about in weird ways in the scattered world we live in right now. I approached her from some signs that she had it all together, and the conclusion has been that she is the most stalwart fan to Dark Shadows I've ever seen, next to a few other people, or alongside. With Lisa, this is long-term. I told her what my suspicions were about DS fan work and all the things that didn't make sense, and she not only confirmed them, but after a number of months she gave me proof. This was both in bad issues and in the good issues. In fact, I remember opening my Facebook account one morning and screaming my head off, because all of a sudden, at the top of my feed was a photo of Barnabas Collins and Maggie Evans. Lip locked. Whoa. I screamed. Literally. Lots of backstory about that, which will hopefully be in further podcasts. Either way, don't go bothering her or anyone else. It really is rather silly to, rather than come to talk to the source, go and harass some third party. I've been seeing this lately, and it's seriously more immature than so much of the silence in this project has made me. At least I have an excuse.
I've been drinking Madeira.
Next on the list of gratitude is Melissa. This woman has been a major confidant and Lisa managed to pull her from the wreckage of bad fan group discussions and scoop her into our fold. Next thing I know, there is this supremely elegant painting of an icon, a Josephine, I'm going to get it wrong, a Princess de Brugle. The artist is Jean-Auguste Dominique Ingres in Paris. And in all of that elegance, she's swearing like a sailor. And of course, you know, she's looking at me going, okay, quirky, but intelligent. And I'm just going, elegant, swears like a sailor. Okay, here we go. Eventually, the talk starts. Melissa finds Margaret Josette Dupré. After combing a number of stories looking for something like what I have to offer, and begs the question, may I write to you? I gladly send Melissa my email. She hopes she's not bothering me and confesses, can you imagine? I want to talk to you about what you are doing. And my answer is, I want to hear from someone about what I am doing, please, by all means. Or, as they say on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and all dared to brave unknown terrors, to do mighty deeds, to boldly split infinitives that no man had split before, and thus was the Empire forged. So here we are, and Melissa is someone I have very much been searching for since I was 10 years old. If you've heard my other intros about my life lessons, this is a woman who has experienced a ton of complexities in the negative and positive that blend very equally with my own life. So I am thanking her deeply, and I believe it's more than worth it due to the fact that she filled in that final Q&As for the episodes to reach us this November 2015, and release episode 14, Reunion at the Old House. I was not going to release that until I had enough feedback, and Melissa was the final link in the chain to get us this far. However, Pat was absolutely wonderful, and Tingler so much so. And if anyone has been reading the reviews, Tingler is quite a guy. He dislikes Facebook a lot, and we sent emails. He was absolutely delighted to catch up with Milligan and Hecubus, and those 20 days... he wanted to help and give me support and feedback. Those were 20 days of absolute fulfillment to me in this project. We just had wonderful fun. In fact, there is so much fandom competitiveness, I asked him for a pseudonym to review with, and he decided on the title to a Vincent Price film. I adore Vincent Price, so I was all for it. And that is how no one really knows who he is, and I'm glad. We're both done with the friend grabbing, which is just silly and grade school stuff. I am looking for my people. And Tingler was looking for a good audio drama. So we found each other that way. Huzzah! So yeah, we need to help us geek these fandoms up. Dark Shadows especially. And who better to help us accomplish that? Yes, you're hearing the music. I got in touch with this Autumn Archer for the Addams Family, and she answered, oh, I see, and wow, you certainly worked yourself raw. That's a good sign. It means you're dedicated to your art. Or in my case, borderline obsessive. This was, of course, back in February of 2014. Now, that is just a hint of what this awesome young lady gave me in response to my reaching out for help. Later on, I discovered she wondered if I was doing a Dark Shadows Addams Family crossover, and she went to investigate my profile page and saw all the versions to each fandom, then confessed when she saw it. My eyes became tennis balls. Oh my gosh, she thought. This lady is intense. She's like some bionic woman. So, without further ado, we have our interview and workshop discussion between me and Autumn Archer.
in the pit of ultimate dark shadows.
So how did you get into the Addams Family?
Well, I've always been familiar with the Addams Family ever since I was a kid because of the cartoons that they always played on television. And then I think it was around 8 when I saw the 1991 version with Raul Julia and Angelica Houston. And I was at the beach with my mom. We were eating some french fries in the restaurant. And they were like playing the Addams Family, and I saw that kissing scene in the graveyard. So I was a little bit mortified because, you know, in the cartoons, it's a little bit censored, and the only thing that you get to see them do is kiss hat. But in the movie, when there was like that full-on makeout session, I was like, okay.
Whoa, yeah.
Was I allowed to see that? But yeah, that, and then a few years, let's just skip like 10 years. Yeah. I think I was 17 or 16 when I first saw the 60s version, the TV series.
Okay.
And then the next thing I knew, I was like binge watching several episodes a day.
Wow.
And then I just started rewatching the movies. At the time, I was still new to fan fiction. I mean, I just newly returned to the world of fan fiction. So I was like, you know what? It would be so great if I got the chance to like write for these characters. I mean, not just, you know, like sort of toy with them, but really write it, as they say in the fan fiction world, canon, you know, canon pairings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
boy, do I know.
I was very excited. Yeah, I was like super excited to put it out there. And I was nervous, a little bit nervous, but for some reason with the Addams Family fandom, I feel very much at home because I guess I could relate to them in a way because I'm sort of eccentric and I have sort of dark humor and a little bit of the sensuality going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very fun to write for them. And yeah, I guess that's how I got into the Addams Family, watching the series at 16.
Okay,
after all those years of not watching it.
Yeah, because I remember you weren't that familiar with it being there. And then it was like, there's a TV show, and then you go and you have a live-action TV show, and you were just like, wow. And Morticia and her...
Yeah, it blew my mind.
Yeah, Morticia and her tight dress and...
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, last night, I was just going all nostalgia with the Addams Family because, you know, the movie is the first thing you see as a kid. If you're not, like, born in the 60s, the movie is the first thing you see. And then just thinking about all those years when I, 5 years ago, to say at least, watching a series, it's just sort of, it brought back a nice, cozy feeling of happy moments of watching the show. And I gotta tell you, Gomez and Morticia, they're like the only pair that make me temporarily bisexual because they're like both so hot and you don't know whether you want to be the guy or the girl. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know that. Not with them yet, but with another one, as we've talked about before.
Yes, of course, of course. But yeah, that's true. That's how I feel about them. Like, I don't know if I should be a guy or a girl. Like, just watching them just makes my hormones collide. I'm like, what?
I know, and that's good.
I think
that's
I just
where
my baby.
I know, and that's been really extremely helpful to me because the fans of the pairing that I only intuitively mapped out because that was what I saw on the darn show for Dark Shadows, they forgot how to speak, most of them. So I had to go find someone to understand what I was going through with this couple, you know, because the marriage novel, I never intended to write it. And then I'm just like, what's going on? What's going on? And for months and months, and I can't talk to anyone about it. And then I finally discuss it with you and you're just like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. So it really helped me when you, as well as a few others, oh gosh, yeah, I get wiped out. I can't get any sleep. Like, when they hook into you, it's like you're out of control.
Yeah, it's true. They just sort of take charge of your libido, and you have no control whatsoever. I mean, at least you're lucky because you're married. All I'm sleeping next to is a pillow, and I'm like, people, you can't do this to me. Like, a pillow can't, you know.
Yeah.
Can't, like, kiss back. Just no.
You're just writhing, and the couple's driving you crazy. I barely got a hint of that just because sometimes they take me over while he's at work. And I'm like, no, no, not now. Not now. And I'm just like, they're just spewing all these scenes out at me and all of this sensuality. And I'm like, he's not going to be home for like 4 hours. You can't do this to me.
Yeah, that must have been like torture, man.
It still is sometimes, but now there's the baby, so I can. Someday I'm going to do a third draft because that'll get it ready for all the stuff that it's missing. And I have quite a number of people who are more helpful now. We've got a Barnabas Maggie page on Facebook, so on the rare occasion that I go, it's like, okay, we can go here and here. And they're all about accuracy, almost all of these fans. That we're kind of scraping out of the, you know, getting out of the closet, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember some of the stuff you wrote. I remember it felt like an episode, just like a couple of the Ghost of Mrs. Muir stories I read, which were actually quite a long time ago. It still felt like an episode of the Ghost of Mrs. Muir. And that's what a lot of people are looking for. Did you do much reading of the Addams Family fanfiction when you showed up on the scene?
I did. Just to pick on how other writers interpret mm-hmm. the characters.
Right.
But then I had to rely mostly, heavily on the show.
Yes.
The sitcom.
Yeah.
So I had to take mental notes of their actions, their characters, anything about them that was profound, and then interpret that in my own kind of way. Because I had stories in my head, I had little plot lines that I could draw out. But getting their characters just right was something really important to me because I have OCD and writing is a lot like putting on my makeup. Everything has to be perfect.
Yes.
Even if there's a few typos, I can correctly polish that up. But just getting them at the right precise moment of the story, that just that for me is important. So, and the chemistry too. There has to be some sort of sexual banter. And the chemistry, and it's like a recipe. You have to just make it taste right, or else it's like, do it again, write it again. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So basically, I just had to rely on the sitcom heavily to be able to write for them.
Yes. I'm doing a lot of watching. I've got a little blank book. If you get a blank book and it's just got some wacky art on it, and of course, if it's Parisian, then I've got things where stamps as though it's been through the mail and that kind of artwork. It was what I had laying around the house, and I'm like, yeah, that works. That works for the Addams Family. That works for Morticia. I've just taken all the way up to 16. I've been taking notes and notes and notes. And just because there's so much that I need to tap into. I got more involved in the Addams Family in 2013. But because I realized that so many people were reading the original and not talking to me, that I was just cracking down. And I had to find a way back into my swing. Which, of course, here we are. Well, what is it, 2 years later?
So 2 years later. 2 years later.
Yeah, 2 years later, and here we are. I'm starting to get the hang of how it works with watching it and taking the notes. That's one of the reasons I take the notes. So yeah, if you ever want some of these notes, they just list tons and tons of relatives that you never see.
I know. You can even make some up if you want.
I know, and I remember you got that down pretty well. Very well, if I remember correctly, the meals or the recipes. And I was like, whoa, wait a second, that sounds familiar. And I don't know if it was something that you made up, but it sounded like the real deal.
Some of it I did, because I can't really describe how, but I sort of just take up mental notes of how they say certain things or what they would eat, which would be something totally out of the ordinary, out of the norm, so probably eat something that normal people wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. And that story I wrote, Morticia's stew, with Morticia making a pufferfish stew.
That's right.
So,
yeah, and that would definitely not be something safe, right?
And no, pufferfish is not safe. It's actually, in Japan, only licensed chefs can prepare pufferfish because it's... entrails are actually very, very poisonous. If you leave one of its organs inside, you could die from eating it.
Right.
So that's why I chose that stew.
Yes.
That particular kind of fish, because they love danger. They'll eat anything that walks or crawls, especially if it flies. They'll eat it too, so there you go.
Yeah. And that was Morticia stew that you had the puffer fish?
Yes, that was it. Because we needed something dramatic, so I chose that.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, I'm trying to remember if there was something else... Oh, that was what it was. In episode 13, I remember I sent a file of episode 13, and one of the things that Victoria Winters from Dark Shadow says, I don't know how you all survive.
I know. I feel Victoria.
And she's all, but I must say it's a lot more warm-hearted here than where I come from.
Yeah, they're pretty cozy in the Addams Family Mansion. They're pretty warm and cozy there.
Yeah, it was the characters taking over. Again, you do the canonical studying. I was just going to have Peter and Victoria from Collinsport. Lurch scares the crap out of them. Morticia Gomez, just like any other people who show up. And they run away screaming, because they run away screaming from Twin Peaks and then the Bates Motel after that. And then they reach it. That was my plan. And then I was like, okay, how do I get this right? So I studied the Addams Family and I'm like, they have to stay. They're not going to run away from these guys. They're too good.
I know. And actually,
yeah.
If I may say, you actually inspired me. It's a couple of nights ago that my brain hatched an idea in the Pit of the Ultimate Dark Shadows, since you had a mesh of the Addams Family and Dark Shadows in there. I also had an idea, but it's like for a crossover. Why not combine my two favorite shows, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir and the Addams Family?
Oh,
so I was
yeah.
like, yes, I can do this. I can totally do it.
Whoa, okay, yeah. Wow, yeah, I was wondering if you had gone down that avenue. Mostly I keep wanting to do something for the Pit with all the kids. Just all the kids, somehow making it work. I don't know how,
yeah.
I'm trying to imagine all those kids together. Because there's a lot of them. You know, there's Pugsley, Wednesday, Candy, and Jonathan, and David, the ghost of Sarah, she's a ghost, and then there's also this little girl, Amy, and I'm not counting ones from centuries before. Oh, Eddie. You know, Eddie Munster. I guess he's one kid over there. Marilyn could have a party for the kids. Just invite them all over to the Munsters.
I know. That would actually work, because it's fiction. You don't have to, like, stick to any specific rules, since you are the one creating the plot line. You can just literally send out invites.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you do still want to get them right. And one thing that I'm dying to ask, get an answer, I've asked up the wazoo. Lily decided that Marilyn was going to be in charge, because Marilyn's always like, oh, I'm too... She feels like too mundane, that she's too out there, or whatever it is. So Lily leaves Marilyn in charge, and Grandpa's worried about that. And I would say, you know, what could happen? Is this okay? What do you think? Like, click. That's the end of it. No conversation. Like, there's nothing out. There's nothing there. So you're just like, well, I guess I just kind of have to figure it out on my own how Marilyn could handle this. Anyway, do you have any seed ideas for Addams Family Meets the Ghost of Mrs. Muir?
I do. Remember the story? Yeah. I've actually... Oh my gosh, it's like my brain is like going like 30 miles per hour. Right? So remember the story I've been working on, Carolyn Muir, the Reluctant Astral Traveler?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So after that, something is going to happen. I'm not going to say what, but something happens during the duration that Mrs. Muir keeps on visiting the captain in the astral plane. The captain gets a chance to be a man, like a full flesh and blood man, for one day.
Okay.
For only one day. I'm still working out some of the details, but of course, since he's a guy for one day, what does he and Carolyn Muir do? They go out on a date.
Yes.
The first date, yes, out in the big, wide waiting world, and since such a big occasion, they take the kids along with them too, like, hey, we're going on a road trip. So they're like, okay, yay. And then suddenly this horrible storm breaks out. Oh, and it's not the captain's fault. There's literally a semi-hurricane passing through, and they get stuck. Cemetery Lane. Yeah.
Oh.
Cemetery Lane 001. They get stuck there.
I'm whoa. Like,
okay, where are we again? Don't ask me, you're the one driving, woman. That's sort of
very good.
I actually took a step from you.
Oh,
I hope you don't mind.
No.
I got a lot of ideas from you, like thinking about your stories and how much effort and gusto you put into them, and enthusiasm, no doubt, into every story and into every line. So in this particular scene, I just see it in my head: bewildered-looking Mrs. Muir. And the Muir children following her into the Addams Family abode, and the captain trailing behind her. And then the first person to greet them, aside from Lurch, is Grandmama. And then she puts on this big smile and says, "Hi, handsome," to the captain. And the captain's like, "Who the hell are you?" You know?
Yeah, and you wonder what would lead them to the house. Would the gate bring them open? Because it automatically opens the gate at Cemetery Lane.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah, I also forgot. Grandmama is the only person who knows that the captain is a ghost. Huh. Morticia and Gomez, they don't immediately notice anything different about him at first glance, so Grandmama is the only one who notices that he's not all that human, so that's why she keeps on flirting with him the entire episode, at least the one in my head. So it's going to be a lot of innuendos with that. Old woman, like, seriously.
That seems to be the writing style of the Addams Family that I've picked up on. And the nice thing is that I'm catching glimpses of the Marx Brothers humor, which is good, because Nat Perrin...
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the one.
Yeah, he wrote for Groucho quite a bit. I was like, oh my goodness. A lot of the Groucho style that Gomez has, John Astin's Gomez, is... It almost feels like... This strange gift
Gomez
has some of that Groucho stuff, but there is Morticia, and there is no other woman.
Yeah.
So the seesaw effect you were telling me about, I'm picking up on that, but I'm also picking up on how the communication happens, but there's an obliviousness, and that makes it kind of funny, because people, they use just the right words so that one party, they don't understand, they don't get the whole, they don't get all the information. It could mean anything. Like the painter, Sam Picasso. I was watching that one. And the art critic, Bosley Swain. He's looking at some of this art, or art by Grandmama. You can tell that he is in a state of shock, likely because he's disgusted. But he says things like, it's incredible. Which could be good, bad, you know? So it's that kind of thing that I'm picking up on.
That's true. And also one more thing. Could you imagine the Muir children meeting the Addams children? The blonde meets the brunettes. It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I still have to catch up with your other work. Then, so I'm sure the listeners will wonder, well, you know this Autumn Archer because of the Addams Family. How did she get into the ghost and Mrs. Muir? She wasn't doing that before.
I blame it all on Daryl War.
Yes. Because if anybody remembers, there was a moment where there was some, you know, a minor upset. Because when I post on the Ghost of Mrs. Muir page, I have to make sure there's an image with the Ghost of Mrs. Muir involved in some format. Otherwise, it will be questionable. And so I had posted something. Just said, hey, I doesn't have the image, but I'm going to try or whatever, and just do my best. I think it was Happy Talk. It just didn't have the needed look, or I don't know what. There was a bit of a to-do, and I was like, okay, I've had this image of Captain Greg, and I had meant to make this banner. I meant to make this banner for months and months, but I hadn't gotten to it because I was looking for a font that looked like Ghost is in the ghost. So I write the Ghost of Ultimate Dark Shadows just in the old English type. And I say, phooey, Windows Paint doesn't have enough fonts. And then some nice people were trying to send me fonts that look like the ghost in the Ghost of Mrs. Muir. And then I finally got it right. And then I posted that as my banner. And you saw that. You saw the banner.
It's that magnificent man. I just remember, like, you know, I sort of stalk your profile because it's fun. And I was like, oh, wait, she changed her cover photo. I was like, oh, he's hot. Who the hell is he? And then I was like, he is beautiful. Just look at those eyes. I was sort of mesmerized. And then when you said, oh, that's Captain Greg. And I'm like, Captain Greg? Okay, so I'm going to start watching The Ghost and Mrs. Muir now. So I'll just go and be alone with the television set.
Yes. Yeah, you find it and then... It's all over, like, weeks and weeks.
Yeah. And when I got into the fandom of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, I felt my brain, like, exploding in several different aspects of my skull as they go boom and boom and boom and boom. And I was just so excited about discovering this whole new other world. It's like stepping into literally a different world. And I was so excited that when I started posting, when I first joined them, Ghost and Mrs. Muir group, but you know, it was sort of quiet, you know, people were quiet, and then here I come posting pictures of Captain Greg and squealing, like, I literally reduced those to a bunch of schoolgirls, like, literally.
Well,
and we literally would shut up.
It was so fun, yeah, definitely, to the point where it sort of turned into Edward Mulhare theater. which is fine, you know. All pleasure. So no problem. Really active. Yeah. And there's a few new people. I always hope that I contributed in some way that made people more aware of the ghost of Mrs. Muir or reminded them. But I hear so little from anyone that I just have to hope that that was the truth. Mm-hmm. When I found the ghost of Mrs. Muir, I was looking for a way to save Sam Evans on the soap opera Dark Shadows. Some way, some interruption that would stop his demise by the witch Angelique. And what it was, well, he works on a painting. Now, I still want that painting destroyed that Sam Evans does. However, in the original soap opera, when she finds Sam working on it, he's hired by Barnabas to do this and do a Dorian Gray thing, so she's getting all messed up. And she blinds him. And I was like, you know, no. And then I thought, okay, so how do I interrupt that? And then I found the ghost in Mrs. Muir. And I was like, this is good. It's in Maine. It's Schooner Bay is close by. It's different. I watched it twice in a row, and I was walking back and forth to work, and I was like, I got it. Switch the paintings. Something will happen to Captain Griggs, and they have to get a painter, so Tony and Carolyn from Dark Shadows will go to Schooner Bay on a date, and they'll meet Mrs. Muir, you know, that Candy and Jonathan did something, like got some food on it or something, and then they'll take it over just at the right moment. It's like, oh no, we know a painter. We know a painter in Caldsport, and we'll take it over. So just at the right moment, they'll interrupt him. He'll have already messed with Angelique's painting. They'll see who it is. They don't like her anyway. And they'll switch the portraits while he's off making coffee. And there it was, you know?
Wow.
And that's episode 4. I mean, if you listen to episode 4, then at the very end, you get to hear the ghost of Mrs. Muir music.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. Yeah, I remember that. That was a good episode.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I was like, I got it. Because that's the whole reason I started all this, was Sam getting messed up. I mean, it was hurting for everyone on the soap. And then as soon as Sam and Maggie's father got it, I was all, that's the final straw. I can't end this. So the ghost of Mrs. Muir helped me save Sam in so many ways. It's such a good show. Such a good program.
Yeah, I know.
It's so well written.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's why when I first started to write, I only wanted to start with a drabble because it was completely something different from Adam's Family and what I'd been doing for over a year already, and then here comes this completely polar opposite TV show that was so heartwarming and yet so spooky, but it was romantic spooky at the same time. I would say it's more sentimental than humorous because of the conflicting relationship between the captain and Mrs. Muir, so I only wanted to start with the drabble. I just wanted to get it right, just to have this banter thing, the breakup makeup thing that they do, like, oh, we're fighting, and then, okay, let's make up.
Yeah,
and I just love that. That's probably my favorite part of the show, when they fight. They just get into nasty fights.
They do, yeah.
And, yeah, then when they do finally make up, it's just like, darn it, why can't anyone write that they finally kiss on the show, dang it. But they did, but it's in a dream sequence, so it'd be fun to actually have them kiss.
Yes.
In my story, with them as a human for one day, so
yeah. There we go. Yeah, they'll take after Gomez and Morticia. It'll rub off on them.
Yeah, oh, and speaking of, did I tell you about the scene that I was going to write? When in the ending, towards that crossover I was telling you about, that when your family finally says goodbye to the Adams family, like, Grandmama won't stop hugging Captain Greg. You can stay with me. I love semen.
Sounds so good.
And Captain Greg is just like mortified. Captain Greg's face is just, he's not one to be scared, but of Grandmama, he's terrified. Just,
that sounds really good. Like,
I know, he's like pleading with Carolyn, help me, help me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grandmama, when she's being affectionate, she's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that particular crossover that hopefully will take place shortly after Carolyn Muir, the reluctant astral traveler. So I'm still working on that at the moment. And it's kind of funny, when I do go into Captain Greg mode, he's kind of a little more, he comes on strong when I tap into his character. He comes on strong in a way that you cannot ignore it. Unlike Gomez, when I do write for Gomez, I can just sort of semi-ignore it because I'm already very familiar with this character.
It's automatic, I, yeah. Like, with Gomez, it's automatic.
Sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But with the captain, you can't ignore it because you're still not that familiar with his character. Mm-hmm. So when he says something, you better write it down. Just write it down. I don't care. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, just, you know, just stop and leave me alone after this.
You'll have it done, woman.
I remember. Yes, precisely. It wouldn't stop cursing. Got me blasting around the house like blast, blast, blast. And then my mom's like looking at me funny, and I'm like, I'm cursing in nautical terms, okay? So just leave me alone.
Yeah, I know. And I did the same thing, and I do the same thing still.
Yeah, we do. We both do. And also, with my last chapter, chapter 4 from The Astral Traveler, mm-hmm. When he goes into prose, because you remember episode 6, right? When Vanessa comes over and we get to see the poetic side of Captain Greg, and he like wrote Vanessa's great-great-grandmother this really long letter. So I took inspiration from that. Then I was like, oh, what would Captain Greg say to Mrs. Muir if he had to write her a letter similar to that? And then before I knew it, here he goes again. It's like dictating in my head. I can literally hear his voice in my head. I'm like, oh, right, like this. And I had some instrumental piano in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, like, I'm not going to be able to put down my pencil tonight. So he's actually really super romantic in prose. Like, it's ridiculous. Even I was like, okay, thank you, Captain Greg. That was very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
One of my experiences when I go into Captain Greg mode, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
I miss working with them, too, and I won't have anything up close until, I think, my 18th episode. But, yeah, I miss working with them, and I keep on watching the shows just to try and keep everything juggling in some sort of proper order, which is one of the reasons I want to back away from Facebook more and more, because it's just not going... I don't get enough done. I am too distracted there. And I remember we were talking about...
Okay.
You were like, did you see this photo that I... And I was all, don't make me go to Facebook. You're all, no, it's okay. I'm like, I'm getting anxiety. It's just get the jitters over there. And you're like, yeah, I know. Facebook anxiety. It's...
mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean. I had to, like, deactivate my other account a few days ago. My public account. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's on there. I have about 800 people, half of them I don't know, and
I know.
Sort of deactivate that.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a bit.
Yeah, I noticed
that. Everything's good now.
Yeah, I noticed a friend of mine did that too. She had two different ones, mm-hmm. and she just. It's just been the overload this last couple of years. I think everybody's feeling the Facebook overload. It's just, I can't do this anymore. This is not healthy this much of the time, and spreading myself this thin. So in this podcast, I don't necessarily have to tell you, but I'm planning on giving 4 alternatives to Facebook. It's like, you can keep your Facebook account, you can use it, but you might want to try these other alternatives that are much quieter and will put you kind of in a more peaceful frame of mind, per se. Because, yeah, people have relied way too much on
Facebook. Is just, I noticed, it either worsens your depression or it sort of just makes you feel all together, like you're... I don't know, being smacked around.
Yeah.
That's how, at least
yeah,
that's
it's
how
like,
I feel.
Did you notice, too, it used to be the sound for a notification was ding dong. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It changed to...
Mm-hmm, but that's different.
It's like a piano key. I said,
yeah, it is.
I said to a dear friend of mine now, Melissa, I said, is that middle C? And she saw, good ear, I believe it is middle C. Like, it's middle C that we're getting on Facebook now.
You've been on Facebook too long to notice that.
yeah. Well, because my ear is very adept at picking up idiosyncratic noises. But yeah, that ding dong, ooh.
Yeah.
That really was killing us for a while. You're on the edge of your seat. You have to go and look at some garbagey group that you don't even care about. Or die.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, and you know, just all these people you don't know. And then the people you do know just leave you in the lurch. And I have friendships that I've carefully fostered since before the internet, and they're destroyed. They're destroyed by Facebook. They've been completely destroyed. There are people, not that many, thankfully, but quite more than I'm comfortable with, that I may never speak to again because of Facebook. Because it just got them so... I mean, and pre-internet friends. just gone because they just turned into lazy. My theory is that it's the nice side of them goes into a robotic mode with the share and the click. And so that leaves the negative discussion. That's the end of that. That's all that's left to us is focusing on the negative. So when people tell me, don't pay attention to the negative, there's nothing else out there. We need a counterbalance. And it's not a meme, you know, true. It's not some meme that you're going to throw. Oh, here's a quotation by somebody else. And no, there's no, we have to go back to one-on-one big time.
Yeah, of course.
So, when you get that, like our report, just this conversation now, when we started to talk on Skype, it was like, just starts to feel so much better, you know, because you start to feel human again.
Yeah, it does.
Which I love.
Because when you're talking to someone, you get a response, an immediate response, whereas on Facebook, you're not exactly quite so sure how people actually feel because they hide it so well. And I have to be, not to be honest, I sometimes do that. You know, just for the sake, because I don't want to give people the wrong impression of me, because I do have my moods, and no, I'm not putting on a happy face, because I have to. It's just how I was brought up. I was brought up to be polite, grace under pressure, and to handle myself with care when I'm in front of the public. So,
yeah,
whatever is troubling me, I can just put that aside for a while.
Yes.
Because there's a difference between being two-faced and just being gracious and polite. And sometimes people get that mixed up. Oh, she's two-faced because she's feeling something and she's not, you know, showing it. I just think they should learn the difference between the two. So
yeah.
There's no...
They misread.
So, yeah.
Yeah, even if you do speak up, that you'll write a paragraph that you're feeling how you're feeling. And they will totally misinterpret it and load it with all these things that they're thinking about. It's like you got to read some of these posts out loud to understand what's going on. But yeah, they read into all this stuff and you're like, the attention span is so, the focus is just gone.
That's why it's important to be careful with what you share sometimes because people can get so judgmental in a matter of seconds. It's like crazy.
Yeah, well, I don't really want this super judgmental anyway. Like, and you guys have been so good. I mean, you saw me getting just outraged and upset, and then we talk on Skype, and you'd make me feel better. And there were times where I was just like, oh my gosh. And you're like, it's okay, or hey, I understand. You weren't scared. Like, all these people are so scared. You just...
I know.
I hear you. Yeah, it's not... it ain't perfect out here, that's for sure.
I've also had a lot of conflict in my life, so if someone is like having a sort of emotional outburst, it's because the emotion can no longer be contained inside. It's like a soda popping, you know, it's too much, like you shook the bottle too much and now it's gonna burst. So I sort of learned to take that and sort of let it explode and then let the person sort of calm down to their own terms, because you can't force anyone,
right,
you know, to calm down. They have to do that themselves because they chose to, not because you forced them to.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that have approached me who claim to have been helpful or be helpful, and they're just antagonizing me. I remember my husband has read messages and posts and stuff, and he's like, if this person's trying to be helpful, they're doing a really rotten job of it. They're doing the exact opposite. So,
yeah
having to deal with that and this assumption that, well, this person helped so-and-so, and it's like, that was not helpful. That was antagonistic.
And you've never been that way. Okay. So we're supposed to talk about vintage movie interest?
Yeah, well, I felt that was a good segue between your interest in the Addams Family and the Ghost of Mrs. Muir, because whether it's the spooky style of the Addams Family with some fun in there or the Ghost of Mrs. Muir lighter aspect, the writing is still tip-top in kind of that vintage movie way. So it made sense that you would grow an interest for the Ghost of Mrs. Muir as well with that odd introduction, my banner.
Yeah, that's true. Well, just for a brief summary, I think I've already told you this, but I've developed a vintage movie interest at the very young age of 8.
Nice.
Watching old movies with my family, from the Ten Commandments to the Blinking an Eye to Cleopatra, and at the time, these movies were all I had access to, so I would watch them as much as I could, and I was just mesmerized with these films. And later on, when we had cable, I would watch Pillow Talk with Doris Day and Rock Hudson, Giants with Elizabeth Taylor and James Dean. And later on, when I got my first computer, the first thing I did was just research about all these films, and one film led to another, and then I would start digging deeper for how the production was, you know, what was the story inspired from. And then as my appetite for vintage movies grew, I started going backwards in time, going further backwards into the 50s, the 40s, to the 30s, and basically I could not stop watching these films. And my friends consider me a bit strange in that particular way, because, you know, there are a lot of teenagers nowadays. I'll be, like, walking around with their Android phones, and when you'll be scrolling, they'll be, like, a bit of porno pornography in their phones, and I'm like, oh, okay, something to keep you warm, eh? So when my friends would take my phone and open it, they'll be just vintage pictures, glamorous pictures, handsome and beautiful women on my phone, and vintage movies. I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, well, that's my porn. You watch that kind of porn? Well, this is my kind of porn.
Yeah.
I would say loving vintage movies has definitely made the biggest impact in my personality, because there are a lot of feminists nowadays, which I admire. I admire them for their strength and their courage and their ability to, you know, break the mold of what is supposed to be in society, what's supposed to be the ideal female. But at the same time, when I look at these vintage movies, I realize that it's good to be strong, but it's also okay to be feminine. It's also okay to be wanted and protected by a man, you know? It's good to just be a girl.
Yes.
And you don't have to discard the male persona and prove that, oh, I can't be just as tough as you, which is fine too, but it's just also fine to let the man be the man, because you know, if you get to, like, be showered with gifts and luxuries, like, why not? But if you want to get them yourself, that's not bad too, so at least that's how I see it.
Yeah, and chivalrous, so, type of gentleman.
Yeah. It also helped me, the vintage movies taught me a lot about being polite and, you know, that old-fashioned sense of communication, you know, without the phones, without all this technology, just long love letters, even that, what was that thing called again, when you wire someone, send them a wire.
Telegram?
Like, yeah, that's the one. And then people in those days, when they get a telegram, it's like the most exciting thing ever.
Yeah.
And nowadays, when we get a notification, I'm like, meh, on Facebook.
Yeah, it's empty. Or nerve-wracking.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's empty and or nerve-wracking.
Yeah, tell me about it. And my appreciation for these films, for that golden age in Hollywood when everything was so magical, it just grew and grew. And if I'm having a bad day, I'll just pop in one of those films, then it'll just make me feel better.
I know
about tomorrow or the next day or today even. To me, it's a big source of inspiration. And when I look at these films, I think of poetry all the time and romance and how it should be. Because nowadays, a lot of people are sort of, there isn't a lot of old school romance.
No.
At least not from what I've seen, because it's all so fast forward nowadays. Texting, love letters have turned into an abbreviation of ILY. And and instead of those long romantic proses, it turns into text messages, and you're like, where did the romance go? And I'm like,
yeah.
Man, notes to the text messages.
Oh my gosh.
In a rare occasion, if and when it does occur. But most of the time, I just get long text messages, which is okay too. As long as that person is directly conversing with me and opening up to me, I don't mind.
Yeah.
As long as there's a part of that person in the conversation, not just the machine typing back to me. So,
yeah. It's funny that I got a suggestion. Pinterest keeps emailing me all these suggestions. But one actually I did like. There were a few romantic boards, and one had wedding vows. There was something handwritten, and I'm like, I'm going to put that on my Maggie board. It was so lovely, and it was handwritten.
And there's also Google Plus, and somebody on Google Plus, I've noticed that a few of the people trying to reach out to me, it's like they've never had a computer or something. I'm not sure, because I can't get enough information. But people are like, oh, I'm just having a hard time trying to learn how to use the internet at all. So I have to ask, are you on a device? Are you on a phone? Usually it's one or the other, never a computer. And one lady on Google Plus said, I'm much better on pen and paper. And I was like, oh, really? And she's all, yeah. All right, let's exchange addresses. Let's go. You know, I'll send you CDs. I'll send you, you know.
Became pen pals.
Well, not yet. I still got I set up part of the package that I want to send to her. And I got to get the letter written. But yeah, I'm dying to get back into pen palling. And people are so out of it. And unfortunately, one of the main things I can focus on is this project. So it has to have something in there that is similar or on that topic as well. And unfortunately, but at the same time, it'd be much better just to pen pal. And I said, you know, I might have to type this out just to get it to you faster, because I'm worried that I'm just going to wait and wait and wait if I try to do a pen and paper one. And she says, oh, that's okay, but you're going to get the calligraphy set. You know, you're going to get my calligraphy. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. You know, that there's someone out there that would prefer to make it a pen pal thing and has said so, and we've exchanged addresses, and that's what I always wanted with this. I mean, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows actually started because one of my dear friends, who I am acquainted with through pen palling, paper and pen, we've been writing since I think the late 90s, she knew Dark Shadows, but she had sold her DVDs because it wasn't getting any better and she needed the money. And so while we were watching Dark Shadows, we were having a lot of fun because there was a stage production. So there's goofs here and there, and some of the characters get funny even if they don't mean to. So I was sending her pictures of me acting out some of these parts. Her memories of Dark Shadows was coming back, and she was like, oh my gosh, you look like Julia Hoffman. And I was like, okay. And this is before the Depp movie, way before the Depp movie ever came out. And we're just watching the show, and I'm sending her all the stuff about, oh my gosh, this is happening, that's happening. And then, of course, Sam goes down, and I'm combing the fan fiction for about 5 years, going, oh my gosh. And I finally say, hey, how would you feel if I started a series, a Dark Shadows series, with more characters and solved all the problems? And she said, I would love it. I said, okay, let's go. It was pen pal. She's a pen pal, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that was the encouragement. It's always been pen pals. And the crazy thing, when you talk about love letters, right? José and Barnabas, their relationship was built on letter writing to each other. A lot of it. So it fits. The whole thing fits. Yeah, that's good.
That's actually pretty good, because I think letter writing is a lost art.
Not entirely. It's just, if we're online all the time, we're not seeing the mail. It's out there. I mean, there's three organizations I know of that are keeping it going. It's not as strong as it was.
Oh, yeah.
But we're trying. We keep trying. And greeting cards are still in plenty, being sold in stores. In fact, I found a number of anti-Facebook, anti-social network birthday cards.
Anti-social. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Just anti-social network and, you know, anti-Facebook. I sent one to my pen pal because her birthday's coming up, and it says, it's like this Victorian postal worker, and the caption reads, yes, it's a card, a paper one, and you open the card, it says, happy birthday, old school.
We need more of those here.
Yeah. Then there's another one that has a Victorian guy with like this massive mustache. It's all that great public domain artwork. You don't have to really pay anyone to do this artwork, although I'm sure some people do. Yeah, handlebar mustache. And he says, back in my day, we didn't need Facebook or Twitter. And you open it up and he says, because we all had cholera, that was the news, and we didn't need social networking to tell us that.
Man, that's so crazy. Yeah, I'm rather curious, though. How is your handwriting? Is it very neat? Or how do you write?
It's better now that I've been taking notes on the Addams Family and using that blank book. I have two or three different styles. I have cursive. Mm-hmm. And that's good for when you're in a hurry or Barnabas can't shut up about his woman. So, all right, I'm doing it now. Damn you!
Just, all right, cursive. It all comes out. And, yeah, he gets really excessive. He won't let me write scenery. So, but then my print is quite unusual.
Matt, I think you have a more neater handwriting than I do, to be honest, because it depends on how focused I am. If I'm super focused, then my handwriting can be neat. But if my focus is sort of hopping from one subject to another, it gets pretty, a little bit messy. Yeah. And a little bit, sometimes my handwriting looks angry half the time, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I shift personalities too a bit when I do print, I look angry. When I do cursive, I'm suddenly back into the 18th century. I'm like, what? It's like so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go back and forth with different styles, which also shows a multifacetedness in us. Although, yeah, there really should be more handwritten letters done just to keep it in practice. Somebody at this craft gathering I'm hosting said that she makes lists, so she kept in practice. But another crafter got really worried because she was all, I picked up a pen the other day and it was like my hand didn't want to work. I'm typing too much. And I told her, I'm like, one thing that you can do with that is get a sand balloon if your hand feels a little out of it, or get a Beanie Baby, you know, or something like a Beanie Baby, and just caress it, just squish it. It's a good exercise to have, especially if you're already doing letter writing by pen and you're getting sore.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's my problem with my hands sometimes. I have weirdly tiny hands. I have small, like, it's so tiny I can't, like, fit anything in it. So when I'm writing, it tends to get a little sore after a while.
You're petite.
It's really petite.
Oh, did you listen to the clip from episode 15 of the MP3?
Oh my gosh.
Uh-oh.
Wait. Let me try to remember. Hang on. 15, I think you did with Grandmama, right?
Yeah, and I remember you told me, since I couldn't find Blossom Rock to get her down, I had this feeling that she's just not in the series that much, but she's in there plenty, you know, now that I've really studied even more thoroughly, which I'd meant to do 2 years ago, but I got caught up in all the garbage. So I shot for Carol Kane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was shooting for Carol Kane, movie Grandmama, just thinking close enough. And or the Charles Adams, just what I was getting from Charles Adams' drawings of her and some of the goofy stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got...
Yeah, now I remember.
Yeah, the linguist buddy that I made friends with, she was out here and we went to a bookstore and she's like, got credit at the store, so if you, and I need to use it so you can get whatever books. And I found Monster Rally by Charles Adams. So we got that. And of course, I'm looking at Grandma Maja's just so goofy.
Yeah, I know she is.
And
Captain
yeah.
Greg's still terrified of her.
Yes, I love you. I know. It's like, oh, we're you and I are putting Captain Greg in some pretty hot water. I got Adora angry at him, and Grandmama in love with him.
Yes. Just because it's just so funny because Captain Greg. I mean, when Edward Mulhair, of course, portrays him as a. You know, he's just so virile and attractive, and we all know that in Grandmama's place, we would all be clinging to him and say, I love nautical stuff, you can come and stay with me.
Yes. So I appreciated that you told me that, hey, it's okay if you're doing Carol Kane right now. And I think as I move forward with my series, Grandmama will probably slowly alter more like Blossom Rock, because I'm sort of doing that now with Lily Munster, because she was way too chipper. But I'm whittling that down to the possibility that she was just happy to go on a vacation. So she was super chipper. But now I think she's going to get a little more motherly and she's going to, you know, because she's trying to get into her looking like she did when she first came to be with Elizabeth's daughter to go on a trip with her. And that she looks like Yvonne DiCarlo. She was getting nonconformist for whatever reason. So yeah, if you heard the clip, oh gosh. So the spell work is going on and she's saying, stare into the vapor for episode 15. Try to think of a time when you were most scared for your life. There's an image in the steam of Reverend Trask from Dark Shadows, and I remember showing you a photo of his, and you said, and with Grandmama, she's like, golly Moses, what a widow's peak he had! She could see this imagery from Victoria's memories, and I remember showing you that.
No, I remember.
And you said, something like, that is a seriously disturbing hairline.
I know, that's what I said. It's like ridiculously, ridiculously crazy. In my opinion, I think you did a good job with Grandmama.
Okay.
Because there was still some flavor of your own interpretation of her. You didn't force it too much to sound precisely like her. There was still tinges of your own twist, so it made it work, which I think was great.
Oh, okay. I was just trying to get her right, and I couldn't figure it, because there wasn't a whole lot out there just about her. So I had to just look about and come up with, well, what is the most likely thing if Grandmama is a witch who doesn't like the word witch? If she's able to do this, that, and the other thing, okay, you know, what are we, how is it going to work? So she never, in episode 15, she never even says it. She's just like, or she does say it about Trask. Oh, yeah, that guy. He accused almost everyone of being a witch, and I know how you feel about that word, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. What about what she thinks, because Victoria Winters, it's VW, right? What do you think about Grandmama's reaction?
VW. What
do you... and she's just baffled, just like, for a man of the 18th century, he seems to have a preoccupation for Volkswagens. Because of the big VW.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good. That was good.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, okay, you know, whatever that is, I don't understand.
Yeah. Speaking of favorite characters, so you know Tim Curry, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, Wadsworth, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Did you know he played Gomez Adams in the third installment of The Addams Family?
Yeah. I've never really seen much of it. It didn't appeal, so I don't... See, that's what I do. When there's something out there that doesn't appeal to me, I don't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, and that's... didn't work out so hot.
Oh, no,
wasn't so hot in that film.
Yeah, to me, he's Wadsworth. He'll always be Wadsworth to me.
I was always curious, by the way, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah.
I know you've seen both versions of The Addams Family, the sitcom, and the movie. Do you have a favorite version of Gomez Adams?
And John Astin's really growing on me. I grew up with The Addams Family because my brother loved it. But it was something that I couldn't quite get into. I think it's just because I got distracted with other things. And then when I saw the movies, I was just hot for the movies. That was my knowledge. And so, but I knew doing this, I would have to go back and study up a lot of the 60s stuff because it's a multi-fandom series of the 1960s. Yeah. My preference is wavering right now. It used to be the 1990 films. So it's wavering. I'm that way. I can't pick a favorite of a lot of things. You know how some people are dead gone on one actor or one character and that's it? And it's just like they're in love or lust or something. I've had a hard time ever being that way.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, it's the couples for me. It's requited love. It's people having a good time together or being in love. So yeah, I guess the answer to the question is just, well, it was the 1990s movies, but now it's...
Oh, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not sure if I could have a favorite. And also with me, I think part of it is my adapting to the idea of wellness, if you know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So wellness...
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, wellness is about focusing on what will keep you healthy or what will make you happy rather than focusing on what you dislike or what displeases you, which is really tough in this day and age. Yeah, that's really tough right now because all we're seeing is whatever people want to post. And you're like, mm-hmm. you want to skip it, but you also want to give people attention. And then you realize you're it's a waste. It's just wasting our lives away, you know. But I've always been like, okay, I am really stressed out. I had to deal with anxiety for a few years and nightmares and stuff like that out of the blue. And also later on, anhedonia, the numbing depression. But I always was... trying to find a way, well, how could I be a better person or a happy person? So I started to look for the light entertainment. I started to look for literature. I started to look for the deeper meaning, philosophy. And I was already attracted to philosophy anyway. And history, you know, and a lot of history research or old books. I prefer old books. That's what's so weird about getting into this and getting on with people on social network, because it's like, it almost feels like none of them really read. And I've done volunteer audiobooks of old books. that's my contribution to literature and my love of, if you need help learning, you do it with audio and you do it with trying to keep your hands busy while listening. And here I am amidst a ton of people who, I guess, listen to my podcast while they're playing Farmville or Candy Crush or picking... Or I love what you said, like, I don't have any time to tell you what I like about your work, Daryl, but I have all the time in the world to update my profile photo. you're like, oh, I think our priorities are a little mixed up here.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, wait, speaking of favorite things.
Yes.
I mean, I know you love John Astin. I love John Astin as Gomez, too. But I have to admit, though, that Raul has grown on me so much. Since he was, like, the first version of Gomez that I've seen that was flesh and blood after the cartoons. So, I don't know why. There was just something about him that was just, like, animal magnetism. Yeah. Was, like... Yeah, what were you saying?
He was just, like, so... Like,
beautiful.
Yeah, like, he kind of scared me at first. Like, whoa, who, this guy's got a, he's a trip. Just those eyes, you know, they pop out of his head.
I know.
Well, also, Gomez, he's supposed to be, what, Spanish?
Yes, yes.
And Raul Julia has that mystique.
Yeah, he is Puerto Rican after all.
Okay, yeah, so that Latin vibe, definitely. It was funny, you know, it's like John Astin, I was watching the one with Sam Picasso, and it's like, let's call the homeland! And I was like, okay. You know, Grandma Bob, let's call the homeland! And I'm like, okay! So, which is also just fascinating with Gomez and Morticia. It's like, okay, so he's Spanish, and she's...
I would say, I think she has a little bit of a British heritage, just because of how she says certain things and how she's so stoic.
Yes.
At times, I would say she has British a bit of ancestry there in England. At least that's just how I see it. But then she sort of fogs that up when she brings out her bilingual talent, because not only does she speak French, she actually speaks several other languages.
Yes, yes, she does.
Yes, which is also one of the reasons why I love writing for her, because I may not be bilingual, but I am an intermediate in French, and I've recently gained a background in Croatian, Slavic, and a bit of Greek and Italian and Spanish, so I have a tendency to also shift personalities when I also shift languages when I do write for Patricia, and gosh, when she, it's like each language that I try to use for her, she just gets, okay, I'm wondering if this is Gomez or I'm like slowly turning into a semi-lesbian at the moment because she's just hot. It's like, it's just so much fun about these characters. They just give you that zing, that, you know, little zip.
Yes.
That you need, like, a lifter at the end of the day, so.
Yes.
It's like super, super fun, and oh man, they just, I know now how you feel when you say that they sort of just take on their own life and when you write about them, because it's exactly how I feel with my fandoms. Heck, Captain Greg. I got Captain Greg in my brain, starting Mrs. New York. He's like a seaman, right? He's probably traveled to all different corners of the world, so he must have picked up some languages that he's just probably hiding and waiting to spring on her, because as we all know, he loves surprising her out of the blue.
Yes.
Yeah. Sort of just like randomly getting them into crazy situations, but I don't know.
See, they take over because I have to act out the parts too. I have to watch the material, act out the parts. So the writing is sort of first, but then when I act out the parts, that's when they'll kind of take over again. And, like, there's a professor in Dark Shadows, and I was writing stuff for 16, and I started to, like, look at it. And all of a sudden, Professor Stokes comes out of nowhere and says, oh, no, Daryl, I'd say that far more eloquently. I was like, okay, yes, sir. Let's work on that. You know, so.
Wow. So there is a difference for every person when they actually do that. Yeah. Wow. It's actually good.
Well,
it's different for every person.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
I watched Beetlejuice twice, and I got crazy. I was worried I was going to break the house. I was like, oh, this is not. You gotta be careful with that one.
Do the voice though. Do the voice just one time.
Oh gosh. Well, I guess it's not in 15, but it'll come up in 16. Barnabas is doing his usual, woe is me and woe is my family and bad things are happening. What can I do? And all of a sudden, he hears, you think you've got problems. You think you got problems. Just sounds like him.
You got it right.
Thank you.
That was easy. That was easy. Man. I mean, you know, they just take over and then they sort of want to do their own thing. And it's so fun to be able to write about them. And then they take their own life form, so to speak. And heck, at some point in my story, the Girls of Muir, in my fanfiction, at some point, Captain Craig will serenade her with a Portuguese song. And I'm like, really, Captain?
Yeah.
You want to do that? And I thought poetry was enough.
Yeah, you're just like, but I can see that. And I need to get to your material. Do more review swapping. That would be really good because your work is especially pleasing and I can focus on it because it's part of what I'm doing. It's part of the fandoms. I can focus on it. For some reason, I can't turn on any old movie, watch any show, open any book. I won't focus unless it's part of the fandoms. But not much Dark Shadows work because a lot of it doesn't stay in canon. It's more about the people writing it than about Dark Shadows. Whereas Adam's Family and Ghost of Mrs. Muir, it's more about the people and doing your homework and all that. So it'd be good to go back to that and get to your work, which you have. For the Adam's Family, what do you have? You have Morticia Stew.
Oh, you can just start with, if I may, Carolyn Muir, the Reluctant Astral Traveler, because I haven't updated Morticia Stew in a really long time, because Captain Greg's got me distracted with this romance, with trying to get it on with Mrs. Muir, so I'm like, okay, Captain, okay. I mean, I got these two locked in a room doing God knows what, and you want me to write what?
Yeah. And I guess I was going to go through all the stories, but at the same time, that's, again, a plug. And I remember with you and other writers, when I plug stories, I said, so, did you get a lot of hits within this last week since that podcast came out? And you all said, yes, I got hit more. Did you get any comments? No. So it's like, what's the point of plugging? It's not going to... You're not tipping the bartender at all here. Just, what's the point?
But, you know... At the end of the day, I do enjoy a good review or two, but just the joy of writing in itself, you know, just the freedom of that blank white sheet within the palm of your hand. There's just something so invigorating about it, and just so, it doesn't judge you. That blank white sheet of paper does not judge you at all. It's your best friend, your confidant, and it just makes you feel that anything is possible, because anything is possible when you're writing.
Yeah,
But it depends, though. It depends on how you use it, because there are some people who like to do stuff with it that I don't want to say, because my mom's too traumatized.
Yeah, when I was doing my original material, I felt that way, but not with this. It's completely beyond anything that I've done. Any kind of relationship I have with my original babies and my original material, it's quite a bit different. Whereas this is, the process is to get enough discussion where you're energized and go forward. And then I was sitting there getting starved. People are enjoying it. They're laughing. And they didn't say anything for 19 months, except for Helena, bless her heart. I just said, hey, there's something wrong. And of course, it's people getting into Facebook and device tech and lazy and don't talk to each other and whatever, you know, and click, click, click. And it's just, it's a bigger scope, you know. So I hope someday to go back to my original material and have that vibe with the paper again.
Yeah, it's true.
But anyway, in this experience, it's certainly, I hope we maintain our friendship for years to come. I really do. Decades.
Me too.
And I also wanted this for the interview. All these people who have bemoaned the loss of the old ways, things we've been talking about, the good entertainment, the vintage movies, the letter writing, old-fashioned romance, going for walks.
Promenades in the park.
Yeah, and they're bemoaning that loss and saying how terrible it is. And here we are, much younger, wanting to hold on to that classic entertainment and the good stuff we get from it. I am 40 years old, and you are?
I'm turning 21 in 2 days. Two days and counting.
Yeah, and here we are surrounded by people in their 50s and 60s, and they're living in this new world and defending it and adhering to it and being bummed out by it, wishing And here we are. It's like, it just flipped upside down. It's like they're sitting there turning into robots and everything. And then here we are, 20 to 40 years younger, trying to carry forward with all the stuff that they've claimed is gone. It's so backwards. It's like, I don't know if you told me this or someone else said, children are complaining that their parents are playing too many video games and not paying attention to them. Did you tell me that?
Yeah, even I. But I'm not actually surprised by the friendship that we've gotten ourselves into, because, to be honest, by the majority of my life, I'm surrounded by adults. So it's easier for me to befriend an adult than it is to befriend someone my age. Because if I talk to someone my age and they don't have like any preliminary introduction to who I am or my personality, they sort of get like, okay, let's just not sit so close together.
Yeah.
For me, it's easier to approach adults than it is people my age.
Yeah, so. All right.
Oh, by the way. Wait, what did he say?
I said, mostly it's the music of the saxophone that's carrying over here.
I don't know. Isn't it soothing? We can just like, think of something really cozy.
Yeah. Well, it gets too loud occasionally, so we're going to have the soothing saxophone. Kind of sounds like elevator
anyway,
music. Yeah.
Yeah. Were we able to cover everything on the list?
Yeah, we're done. Unless we had to do some wrap up stuff. Then. You know, if you want to wrap up with something special.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Basically, we did round it up.
Yeah, so we're kind of pretty much all done for the interview, but we could keep talking if you like.
Oh, yeah, sure. I would have to let you know, give you a heads up, because I got to work out in like 5 minutes with mom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I love that.
I said, do you think we could talk again next week? Like,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a standing order.
Just leave Skype on so I can just like contact you and like ring your doorbell.
Yeah.
And you can like answer like yes.
You rang.
Yeah. Yeah. Like before I go, there's one thing I want you to watch.
Yes.
Go to the Ghost and Mrs. Muir and find, I think it was episode 17. But it was an episode called A Pain in the Neck.
Okay.
And believe it or not, Captain Greg said, you rang. I was on the big table. I was like, what? I was flipping tables in my mind. I was flipping everyone's table. I was like, no, you did not put that in there. They put it in there. The writers put that in there. Because he was like, threatening Claymore, and Claymore was like ringing this like nautical bell.
Yes.
And then Captain Greg like walks over to him, looking like death himself, and said, "You rang."
That's like, awesome. So yeah, I gotta look. Mm-hmm. So this is great.
Yeah.
It's a perfect blending of everything. Yeah. All right. Well, you take care.
Right. You too. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
There you have it. Our kind lady, who is so passionate she would type up stories on her phone with her thumbs, thankfully has better equipment now, but that takes some dedication. I'd say some lovely comments to her work with your thumbs, if that's all you can do, would be fitting. Now I want to wrap up with some of those alternatives to Facebook, because people have this thing that is beyond user-friendly and seems to get people talking less and less to each other, as does device technology. Now, if you want chat rooms, again, there is Paltalk, PALTALK.com, or InSpeak, InSpeak. Paltalk I use more, but it does require downloading the system/app, whatever, and they have help lobbies, which is really great. And I'd say don't feel any need to buy any extras. It can just be chat. And also, like anything else, be careful. There are a ton of cybersex rooms. But at the same time, you have some people who want to bother someone who's not in those rooms for that kind of thing. And many of us are not interested, so it's that big nuisance. Had some idiots on Skype that were bugging me with that for weeks until I altered my directory profile. It's just annoying. So Say, be wary. You know, you gotta just deal with these, whatever you want to call them. Next, there is Google+. It's another social network beyond Facebook. Now, this is a little tricky to use because you have to be interactive, at least with the system right now. They seem to be upgrading things here and there. But the thing about Google+ is, as far as I can tell with my ad blockers, Google+ doesn't have the algorithms that keep enticing you to like-click pages, join groups, or claim strangers you've never talked to as friends. That's the frightful thing about Facebook. You'll get suggestions of people you've never chatted or talked with to be quote-unquote friends with, when many of us know we need an interactive set of variables and discussion to understand if there are any commonalities in order to be friends at all. With Google+, you can add people in different categories. They can be acquaintances, followers, friends. You have to pick and choose here and there. The other great thing I prefer with Google+ is the Hangouts. Well, you aren't getting that same stuff all over to LightClick pages. As far as I've seen, you can open your chat box with someone to full screen, and that screen is a separate window. So you're completely focused in that way with the person you want to talk to, and no distractions on either side of a panel like on Facebook. I truly prefer that. There are groups, and they will sometimes operate with all of that notification stuff when all it is some photo or meme and no chat at all. But still, I don't get the bells or anything. Just a little red bubble, and I just dispose of the notifications if I'm not interested. So I'd say look into Google+ for a good alternative as far as social networking. You know, don't go, you know, saying, oh, I gotta make everything again. You know, you just talk to people. That's the main thing. Talk to people. Talk to people you want to talk to. Use your time wisely. Next, we have the folks, like in the chat rooms, who pipe up. You know, there were a lot of people on Pal Talk who were just kind of like, Facebook sucks, and all this stuff. And, you know, you got everybody once in a while who were like, I only use it for photos. And, okay, so Pinterest, that's the next on our list. Pinterest is very good for that kind of thing, just with the photos. And what I like about Pinterest is you can compartmentalize all of your interests. I've been putting gobs of stuff there. Which, by the way, if people are going to my blog to just grab photos, go to Pinterest. Seriously, people, don't go flying through my blog to go get photos. They're all over on Pinterest. Just go over there. You know, I see these stats and I'm like, go to Pinterest. It's all there. It's all there. Seriously, it is. If you just want to photo. So if I want to think of one of my adopted couples, I can swing on that in the night with my tablet and just get inspired. Not a lot of talk going on. They do have little chat boxes, but they don't get used that much. And like anything else, you gotta check your settings and what you want email notifications for. Blah, 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 you know, same as Facebook and Google+ and Pinterest. Blah, blah, blah. And as you let that quiet mesmerism settle in with all your photos on your boards on Pinterest, scrolling through photos or whatnot is just a simple activity rather than the scattered wipeout it is on Facebook. Last on this set of alternatives to Facebook, but definitely not least, meetup.com. Now, this was one of the things that I had been using, but I neglected for a while because the interface was just not that user-friendly. And Melissa was actually the one who reminded me of meetup.com, and I'm very grateful for that because it's real people, real activities. However, when you sign up for meetup.com, be choosy. That's my advice. The new system there is that same kind of user-friendly where the program wants you to pick more and more and more and more and more. I was thinking my options for interest would run out. You know, I'm just going through the page, and I'm like, I'll pick this. And it's like, it's just not running out. The clicks keep going. So I advise you to pick 3 of your most favorite interests and leave it at that when you start. You know, just pick out of that huge cascade. Pick 3 interests and then go and just say, hey, I'm done. This is all for your local area of people, presumably the U.S. I don't know if meetup.com goes any further than that. and meetup groups do come and go. I've had the misfortune of not owning a car, or the fortune of that, and then eventually had to create my own meetup to bring people to me for interests. But it does cost, it's not that much, about $10, $15 a month to start your own meetup for what you're interested in. So if you're into crafts, games, support groups, photography, something that makes you thrive personally, I'd say pick three of your favorite activities and start looking in your community and just start there, because otherwise you're just going to be going to scroll, and it's going to be the same thing, you know, the same problem as on Facebook where it's like, I'm trying to get stuff done and I can't because I'm getting all these options. You know, so with Meetup, just decide on your three most favorite and start there. Loneliness is an extreme problem. I'm really pushing that because I know that it's true. And a lot of what we're seeing in this age of disconnect with people isn't healthy. You do have to be careful, but shared interest is much of what provides our connection to others, and mainly activities, making that difference and having that contact in voice and space. For the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows? Well, it's a good show. I really believe that. You know, otherwise, I wouldn't have come this far. I mean, I've been doing this for 3 years, people. You know, or more. You know, I've probably been putting this together for 5 years. And I want to keep going. Leviathans and all. But I believe what Facebook's algorithms have instilled within us is this idea that if we post something good, like a meme with a witty saying, or something bad, like a video of animal abuse, and share it, someone else will do something. Somehow all those like clicks are going to make a difference. They won't. This is called passing the buck. And now we are doing it constantly. It's just programming us to do that. It's just pass the buck, pass the buck. Somebody's also going to deal with this. Pass the buck, pass the buck. Fight, flight, or freeze. That's a critter mentality, and we are human beings, so this is not good. Some people listen in to this podcast and radio drama without a care, but some of you do care, and that's who I want to chat with. Right now, we need two more people to get through the discussion for episode 14, Reunion at the Old House. And I say email is the best way of doing this currently. If you want to go through the journey as a whole, I'm always happy to do that by email and get to know you, or as Dr. Hawkeye Pierce says about the patients he's looking forward to in the last episode of MASH, that he wants a longer duration with them and to get to know who they are. Correspondence is what gave us this world that we're living in of luxury and choice. And I say we keep that going. So if you want to help, please email xoisctehe@hotmail.com. For those who are too shy, there is the donation account at Patreon right now. I really do want to alter the sidebar information, but it's just not flushing at the moment. Because you know me, I get silence and clicks and people with their knee-jerk statements off the cuff, and well, I lost patience with this behavior over a year ago. So, I am more than happy with a small band of thoughtful people. I really am. I just wanted 25 people, and now I have way too many downloads, and those 5 people to go on the journey they're still lacking. I don't have those 5 people. You know, I got the grassroots, and I keep on gaining and losing from the grassroots, and we don't even have 5 there. So, yeah, I only wanted 25 people, and now tons of people are listening to me, and it's really, I just wanted a little corner of the world. I do not care about popularity. I really don't. I just want that small group of concerned citizens, as in the Margaret Mead quote. That's all we need. That's all we need. And yeah, if you go to the Patreon account, you know, that'll be really good. I need to figure out how that's going to work. But yeah, I have gotten the knee-jerk reaction. So it gets to the point where I just say, you know what? They say ignore the negative. And the best that I can do is block those people. And that includes people who like-click me up the wazoo. If you think like-clicking on my posts is going to tell me something that you're thinking, it's not. What happens is a lot of times I will check the stats after I get all those light clicks, and it's like maybe one person out of 50 who did a light click that day, and it's just they're just clicking the photo. So that's all that's about. Doesn't tell me anything. A light click doesn't tell me anything. I'm very much like Sherlock Holmes. You know, I'm trying to deduce all this stuff, and I'm not getting the feedback. It's, for me, it's correspondence. It really is. And I don't want to do all this advertising anymore. I just can't stand it. I've been doing it for 2 years. It's horrible. So, it's up to you who care, as I've said. I think it's worth it. You know, these are great shows. And it's a combination of all these great shows. It's celebrating diversity and problem solving and quality programming. Passing the buck. Share like, share like, share like. Passing the buck does precious little. Voicing your enjoyment and insight, that's everything. So use email if you can. You know, just go to the library or something. If you're just using a phone or whatever, go and deal with, if you can, you know, get your library card, all that. Yeah, maybe go get a book you like, something really awesome. But yeah, I say let's keep the bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows going. Let's keep all these diverse groups creating something better. Take care, and get in touch with me if you can.